Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Seth Rudetsky's Back to School. This week, I have the hilarious Joel Kim Booster. And of course, I'm thinking back to high school for some signature stories. And I'm remembering, you know, my mom, and it really paid off for me, would always have me stay home from school no matter what. Like, I really missed a lot of school, and I was so thankful because I hated it so much. It would be things like, there'd be the forecast of, you know, 2 to 3 inches of snow. And she'd be like, no one is coming in today. You must stay home. By the way, we grew up in New York, so it doesn't make any sense. But I would always get to stay home for that. Or I would have a cold and it would be like 2 days to make sure it's gone, like 3 more days to make sure I'm not contagious. I always, always got to stay home from school. It was amazing. So thank you, Mom, for that. And of course, you know, I'm sort of such an innocent in certain ways. I remember I was talking to Mr. Edwards, my social studies teacher, and I was like, we love each other. We both get each other. And he said something about like, oh, last week you missed this, this, and this. And I said, oh, I said, I know. I said, you know what? I said, I wasn't even sick. I just stayed home from school. Like, whatever. You know the way it is. He's like, oh, uh-huh. The next day I see him and he's like, oh, by the way, he's like, I reported you. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, well, I reported you for skipping school for no reason. So you're probably going to have to repeat this class. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you admitted to me that you stayed home from school for no reason. And I was like, I thought we were friends? Not since The Separate Wives? Anybody know that reference? I thought we were friends. 270s? By the way, I didn't have to repeat the grade, but it was devastating to me. I did lose my innocence. But the flip side is my sister Nancy. Like I said, my mother constantly, I stayed home from school like 6 days at a time, only 5 days in a week. But anyway, the point is, always stay home from school. Whereas my sister, it was the 70s, and she was reading, I don't know, 17 magazine, and they were like, to make your hair extra lustrous, wash it with mayonnaise. So she like did this home, you know, remedy thing, washed hair with mayonnaise, could not get it out. Suddenly, my mother's like, time for school. And Nancy's like, no, you don't understand. I'm mayonnaise in my hair. Can't get rid of it. My mother's like, I'm sorry. School is very important. You must go. So my sister, who had a legitimate reason, poor Nancy had, I think maybe because she was the middle child, I don't know, literally had to go to school with a head full of mayonnaise. It was like a greasy helmet of hair because suddenly school was important. The school was, literally my mother was always like, stay home no matter what. So she was walking around. It was basically like Hellman's. Oh my God, still devastated for her. Sorry, Nancy. All right, enjoy the show.
Dreading morning classes.
Stealing bathroom passes.
Football.
Drivers at SATs.
Bullies that attack me.
Why do I have acne?
Jockstraps.
Training bras.
Frenemies.
We remember back then. It's like freshman year again. Ready, steady, now you're in it. Pencil stop, cause any minute Zachary's back to school with
Joel Kim Booster.
Hello, everyone. It's Seth Rudetsky. Welcome to Seth Rudetsky's Back to School. My guest today is a hilarious actor, stand-up comedian, writer, and fan of my reality show, Legally Blonde, Search for the Next Elle Woods. You might have seen him on Conan, Comedy Central, or heard his album, Model, Minority. Please welcome Sarah, Jessica, Joel, Kim, Booster. I knew his three names.
Hello, Seth.
Hi, Joel.
How's it going?
It's quote unquote all good, which is not an answer. All right, Joel, first things first. It's about high school. Where did you go to high school? When did you graduate?
So I had three different high school experiences because I was homeschooled until I was a sophomore in high school.
Horrific.
Yes, definitely. You're telling me.
Did you make your own dresses?
No.
Okay, sorry.
I wish. Yeah. And then my sophomore year of high school, I went to a church school, which was a school that met in a church.
Wait, literally from bad to worse? Okay, yeah. Go on.
And then finally, I somehow convinced my parents to send me to public school for my junior and senior year. And that's where I graduated. And that was Plainfield Central High School. The church school was Ridgewood Baptist Academy. And the home school was Janet and Ken Booster's home.
Okay, so wait a minute. Let me just start from the beginning. Let me just say that my ex-boyfriend that I had for 10 years. Now, wait, what's your... are you Chinese, Japanese?
I'm Korean.
Korean. Okay, so my ex-boyfriend was Chinese-American, and his parents were hardcore religious people, and he was the first son of the first son. So when he basically left Christianity and came out as gay, basically his house exploded. So what was it like for you?
Well, I should say for posterity's sake, my parents are white. I'm adopted.
Oh, so you didn't have any of the Asian pressure.
Yeah, they had me flown in. So I didn't have like that traditional of a Asian American upbringing in that sense, but they were still like, the Protestant guilt is a power unto itself. So it was not an easy coming out experience by any means.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. So hold on. There's so many things I have to talk about with you. So you got adopted by a religious family. It's sort of devastating because, like, the good news is you got adopted. Bad news is hardcore religion. Okay, so in ninth grade, when you're being homeschooled, were you already at that point going, oh my God, this is devastating?
I wanted to go to school, real school, from the time I was in like the third grade. From the second that I knew what real school was and I started to like absorb that through like pop culture, I was like, this is where I need to be. And it's funny because my entire family, my brother and my sister were homeschooled as well, but like they liked it. And I'm just like completely the black sheep in a number of ways from my family. Like I always wanted to be around people. My family are all very shy, very, you know, homebody-ish people. And I've always wanted to be the center of attention no matter what room I'm in. And so I just felt stifled the entire time growing up. And every year I would beg and beg and beg and beg and beg to go to school. And then finally the sort of compromise was that sophomore year church school, to see how things would go. And that was a trip because the school was run, there were a few actual qualified teachers who taught at the school, but for the most part, it was like the guy who taught all the science classes was a lab technician at the hospital. And that made him qualified to teach us science, which, by the way, science at that school was a lot of like creation science.
I was going to say, it's not called science at all. Okay, the earth is 5,000 years old. Okay,
exactly.
Keep going.
Yeah. And then like the Spanish teacher was just a woman in the church who spoke Spanish. And so she taught us how to speak Spanish.
Oh, so no one actually had like a teaching license. They were just
some
people.
Of them did. They're like the English teacher did. I believe the math teacher did. But again, and I think maybe the social studies teacher did. But again, there were only one teacher for like everybody. And so it felt very much like an in-between being homeschooled. Because my class, my sophomore class, there was maybe like 20 kids in the sophomore class. And so we had every class together and it was a lot.
So you went from homeschooling and then you had that 1 year of church. So basically that church school was like a gateway drug.
Yeah.
That then allowed your parents were like, turns out. Okay, well, I feel like I have to keep going backwards for a second. Let's talk about ninth grade for a second. You're being homeschooled in ninth grade. And when you talk about being the center of attention all the time, were you like me? Are you the youngest of your family?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. That's what it's about, girl. And what's your sign?
I'm a Pisces.
Me too. Okay.
So no way. This,
yeah. So youngest Pisces, we want to be a star. Get it. So now it's freshman year and you're just sitting with your parents all day. Is there any interaction with children your own age?
So my brother was being homeschooled at the same time as I was. I should know, both my parents worked. So there was nobody monitoring what was going on in school. Freshman year, I believe I was on some sort of, part of it was online. So I had like a teacher that was online. But leading up to that, it was a lot of like, do this math chapter and read this chapter from the history book. We didn't have like homework. We weren't writing essays. We weren't doing tests very much. So it was very, very, very loosey-goosey. And I thank my lucky stars that I was a voracious reader. I started reading really young and I really enjoyed reading. And so that really saved me because my brother basically just played video games all day because nobody gave a shit. Nobody was watching us or really like was pushing us academically. And in terms of like math and science, I was just like flipping to the back of the book, filling out the worksheets from the answer sheets. And then luckily I would like read all of the English books that we were assigned and I would read like the history textbook cover to cover. And so I absorbed a lot then. So by the time I got to a school, I was so far behind in math and science and so far ahead in English and writing. So it sort of evened out, but it was really an upward struggle for a while with those other subjects.
It's not even homeschooling. It's just called staying home all day.
Yeah, basically.
And when you say voracious reader, did you have the kind of religious parents that, because we had Miranda Sings on, Colleen Ballinger.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was beyond not allowed to read like Harry Potter. Did you have like books banned in your house?
So they were less concerned about what I was reading than what I was watching. My first job was at the library when I was 14. And so I was reading a shit ton of stuff that they probably wouldn't have loved that I was reading. I read a ton of like gay YA fiction. Like I remember sitting in the stacks of the library reading Perks of Being a Wallflower, like not even checking it out because I was so afraid of getting caught. But I every time I would work, I would pick it back up and like read a couple chapters every time I worked. And this was like, this is before I was out even, but I was like seeking out books like that at the library without them knowing.
But it's like basically saying, you're not allowed to smoke. Let me get you a job in a cigarette factory. Yeah. Like, didn't they know that a library is full of books?
I think they were pretty naive about what kind of books I would have access to at the library. And other than Harry Potter, which was a worldwide phenomenon, so they were curious about reading it, they weren't going to read every book I was reading before I read it. So they were pretty loosey-goosey about it. But yeah, thank God for that job, because it really saved me in a lot of ways. It really opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Yeah, but I love libraries, or libraries, as some people pronounce it. Okay, now what about TV shows? Were you only allowed to watch Nova on Channel 13?
Basically, I mean, they locked MTV, VH1, Comedy Central, TNT, TBS, like all of it was locked for most of the time I was growing up. And then like when we switched cable and they couldn't lock it anymore, like I was really great. I had my finger on that last channel button, so I would like turn it to Cartoon Network, but then have MTV watching Undressed, you know, and then I would flip back to the other channel right away. And then when they cut onto that, they confiscated all the remotes in the house. And so then I would just sit in front of the TV with my foot on the channel up or down manual button, and I would do it that way. And then finally, they instated a rule. I had to be on like 5 feet away from the TV. I was pushing it every which way I could to have access to the world, basically. And I remember watching like I Love the 80s and I Love the 90s on VH1 in college. And that's basically my frame of reference for most pop culture in the 80s and 90s. I mean, I was barely alive in the 80s, but like for most of the stuff that I would have been watching as a child in the 90s, I only absorbed through fucking Lonnie Love talking about it on VH1.
It like reminds me of this great book I read called The Charm School, about people in Russia that try to infiltrate America. And they basically take lessons about like, what do Americans like? So like you didn't experience it, but you're like, oh, let me just read what was popular. Yeah. So that's fascinating. And then what were your parents thinking you were going to be when you graduated high school? A deacon in your church?
As of like sophomore, even early into my junior year of public school, I was planning on going to Cedarville Bible College and becoming a youth pastor.
Well, they were planning it, and then you just basically...
No, I mean, no, it was like my plan. I was pretty bought in at that point. Like it was pretty conflicted, but I was pretty bought in. I was going to be a youth pastor, marry this girl named Alicia, have babies, and like that was going to be my life. That was what I had to look forward to.
And did your siblings stay the religious course?
My sister did. My sister married a youth pastor in her 30s, but lived at home until then. And my brother, it's interesting to note, came out about 7 years after I did. But he's still very, very conservative, like a Trump guy, guns. And like him and his partner have basically built like a compound in, I think, Nevada. My brother and I have an escalating war of whose life can be more embarrassing to the other, because my brother is now, I think, trying to become a cop, which it's like, read the room, my friends. Now is the time you want to do that. But other than that, yeah, other than being gay, we don't have a whole lot in common.
But you're not biologically related.
No. And that's my big joke, is that my parents got one off the rack and they made one themselves and they both turned out gay. What are the odds? You know?
Oh my God. Now, do you think that you would have, if you weren't gay, you would have just stayed the religious path? Do you think that's what changed your mind?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to say, but definitely that was the big, like, I was really comfortable in the church for a lot of the time, even though I was praying every day that God would make me not gay, because I knew from a real young age that I was into guys. And I was like jerking off at like 8. You know, so I was like very sexual. I was living like a double life, like this internal struggle of like wanting to have sex and like wanting to explore that part of myself. And then also like I was a nationally ranked Bible quizzer, you know, like
my God, that's a thing. I didn't even know that exists.
Yeah. I would go to New York every year and compete in Bible quizzing on the national team. And I won awards for it.
And yet, masturbating that night to Ryan Philippe. So let me ask you something. When you finally got into high school, were you like that freak ass Bible kid, or were you like super cool because you were new?
Split the difference. My in actually to getting into public school was I got a job at Cold Stone Creamery.
Yes.
And at the time in the suburbs, especially, they leaned into the one in my town, especially, was like, we really want to hire all the drama kids from the area. So they made you audition for the job. So you had to like go in and sing. And like at this point, I knew I really wanted to do theater. And so I was working with all of the theater kids from the local high school and made friends that way. And then I was like, I just need to be doing theater in high school. And the theater program at the church school We did do a musical. That was the very first musical I ever did. No, Music Man. But we cut Shapoopy because inappropriate.
A woman who kissed on the very first date.
Exactly.
We're out. Okay.
Exactly. No. So yeah. So I was Tommy Gillis in The Music Man. That was my first role.
That's usually a quote unquote dance track.
There was not a ton of dancing because it was a Baptist school, so not a lot of movement below the waist was allowed.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I slayed, and then I convinced my parents. That was one of the only productions they ever came and saw me in. And I remember being like, this is what I really want to do. And this school is not cutting it. Can I go to public school to pursue this at a higher level? Which is such a joke because the public school was not that much better than the Bible school, to be quite frank, in terms of the drama program. But I convinced them and they sent me to public school. And I went to public school and I had all of my drama friends. And I, within a month of going to public school, I had drank for the first time, smoked weed for the first time, sucked my first dick and come out of the closet.
Wait, when you say come out of the closet, like to your parents?
No. I came out in 3B lunch to Kristen Roeder, tearfully. And it was a lot. It was like everyone knew I was gay who worked with me at Cold Stone, but I was still clinging to this idea of myself being religious. And I thought I could be in the world, but not of the world. And like, I thought I could really do it, but everybody knew. And it just got harder and harder to deny that when I was around other kids who weren't religious and like standing behind Esteban Vega in choir class where, and his cologne made me fucking hard. So I was like, this is undeniable at this point. I have to come out and I have to like make out with Esteban Vega. I never did, but.
Oh, wait, I thought I was waiting for the happy ending. Esteban wasn't interested.
No. Esteban might've been interested at the time, but it was just like, it was a weird time to be gay in high school. So nothing came of that, but I had more boyfriends in high school than I have had as an adult man.
I cannot believe you went to school when you were allowed to have boyfriends. It's so not my generation. I'm furious. So you came out, so your people in your high school knew, but somehow your parents didn't. So when was the horrible they found you on a porn site moment?
Very close. So my senior year, they read my journal.
Oh, God, why would you write anything down, you fool?
I know. Well, and it wasn't even like introspective. Literally, there was a page that just said, things I've lied to my parents about this week.
Oh, my God. Idiot.
I listified it. It was like a BuzzFeed list. They didn't even have to like sift through thoughts and hopes and dreams. It was just all there itemized in a list. Oh. So they found out that out. There were also lists of like, these are the guys that I've hooked up with. And
I'm going to kill you.
I know. It was pretty bad. And then I reacted really poorly. It was a big paradigm shift because I was playing on
poorly. You're allowed to react poorly. They read your damn diary.
Yeah. Yes. But it was like, it was bad. I mean, the thing is like, I'm bipolar and and it was very evident growing up, especially looking back now, but my parents were very Christian, the kind of Christians who were like, medication is bad.
Oh,
and
no.
So I had a full like episode then and it was rough. And so between that and the sex that I was having, they were like, this kid is out of control. So they sent me to an inpatient mental hospital for teens for a week. And it was tough because like the people there were like, my parents sent me there basically because they're like, he's out of control. He's having gay sex. You need to fix that. And they were like, that's the least of his worries right now. This is like a very toxic environment. And he has problems that sort of go beyond that. But my parents really didn't want to address any of that at the time. So that was really rough. And then when I got back, I ended up moving out.
How old were you?
Quickly after that. I was 17.
So did they diagnose you for being bipolar when you went to that hospital?
No, I didn't get diagnosed bipolar until I was in my like late 20s.
Ay, ay, ay. So they just sent you home basically saying what? Good luck?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they basically, my parents wanted to keep me there longer, but they were like, we like have discussed this with your insurance. Your kid is not crazy and doesn't belong here. Like this was an inpatient mental hospital for teens that had tried to commit suicide or were addicted to heroin or had like tried to kill their parents. And so I stuck out like a sore thumb because I was like, yeah, I'm drinking and smoking and having sex. And they were all like, that's fairly normal.
Coping a teenager.
For a 17-year-old. And so it was very uncomfortable, I think, for them because they were like, you don't necessarily belong here. And they told my parents that. And so I think my parents were sort of looking for more of a conversion therapy sort of situation.
Right.
And there wasn't anything close enough. And so that was the next best thing. But it was, yeah.
You lucked out. And then what did that do to your relationship with your parents? Were you always resentful from then on?
Yes and no. I mean, I was not an easy kid to raise. And I have really sort of retroactively forgiven them for a lot of stuff because of that, I think. But I didn't talk to them until basically when I was a freshman in college. Like, yeah. And so it was definitely rocky for a long time. I think my parents and I have gotten a lot closer. And I think at the same time, it's very much still a don't ask, don't tell sort of situation with the sexuality. And like, it's definitely easier for them with my brother because my brother still is, you know, very conservative. And, you know, he's in like a long-term monogamous relationship with a man he met playing an internet game. So that's just easier for them to come. But I mean, like when my brother comes home, the boyfriend doesn't stay at the house with him. So it's, you know, there's still that situation.
And when you say you moved out, where did you move to?
You know, I slept in my car for a couple of nights. I couch hopped for a few days. So I was gone for a week from school, and I was the voice of the announcements. I rose very quickly at that school and became the voice of the announcements after only 1 year. And so when I was missing for a week, everyone sort of noticed. They were like, what happened to Joel? And people would call my house, my friends, and my dad would be like, we don't know when he's coming back. And that's like an insane thing to tell to a teenager, because then it became telephone hour. Everybody's calling everybody. Like, what did they do to Joel, basically? Because everyone, my close friends knew that I wasn't out to my family and that it was like a very difficult situation at home. And so everyone was really worried. So then I showed back up at school a week later. Everybody sort of heard one version or another of what had happened. And in choir, I had one class with this girl, choir. That was it. She and I did not run in the same circle. She was a jock. She was very popular, homecoming queen, but she was very nice. And she sort of was like, hey, I heard what's going on with you. If you ever need a place to stay, you can come and stay with me and my family. And I was like, okay, yeah, bitch, whatever. Like, you're just saying that to be nice. We don't really know each other. But it was getting colder and I was running out of options. And so I just showed up at her house one night and her parents were furious and were sort of like, you can't just invite strange boys to come and stay at our house. But they let me stay for the night. And I ended up talking to her mom like the entire night. And the next morning they're like, you know, before you leave, come back for dinner. And then long story short, I ended up living there the rest of my senior year. She became my best friend and still is.
Aww.
Her parents co-signed on my student loans for college, bought me a car for graduation. And the interesting thing about that situation was her dad is the Methodist pastor in our town. So that first year that I was out at school, but I still fully believed I was going to hell. My thinking on it was sort of like, well, I can't change this. This is not going to change. I might as well live it up now. And I know I will go to hell. And that year living with Sarah and her family was so life-changing for me and saved my life in a lot of ways, because her dad is super liberal and super progressive and was just like, hell doesn't exist. You're certainly not going there. Being gay is okay, especially in the eyes of God. And like, I would consider myself loosely agnostic at this point in my life. But at the time, it was the perfect bridge for me, someone who was so indoctrinated into a certain way of thinking. And so having someone who was an authority on God tell me that it was okay to be who I was in the eyes of God was really therapeutic for me at that time, because I just didn't, you know, I don't know where I would have ended up had I had the mindset of like, well, I'm going to go to hell anyway, so I might as well live, you know? So yeah. I don't know what would have happened to me. And so I you know, that really changed my life in a lot of ways. And it was also just a really amazing year for me to be able to like come home and talk to her mom about boys and like, you know, like be a normal teenager for a year before I went off and did my adult life. So yeah, it's painful what happened with me and my parents, but ultimately I think it was the best thing. Because the other thing is Sarah's parents helped me reconcile with my parents too. I think it was like easier. It made things easier, I think, you know, knowing that I was in a home that was like a Christian home, and then having a pastor sort of talk to them was like, it lessened sort of the time I think that we spent apart.
My God, turn this into an after school special. So then when you were in high school, what was your relationship with your teachers?
It was interesting because a lot of my teachers really, like, they knew my situation, especially when I was living at the Casey's. And so, like, when I needed, like, permission slips from my parents for certain things, a lot of my teachers would sort of look the other way when it was the Casey's who were signing them.
That's so nice.
Which is really helpful. And I was like the only kid in America who had the best guidance counselor in the entire fucking world, who also knew that situation and also sort of like made it so that Mrs. Casey could call me out of school if I was sick, or, you know, things like that, like really bent the rules in a way that probably wasn't even legal. Yeah. to make sure that I could stay at the Casey's and still be a functioning student at the school.
But you still wound up just going to Christian Bible College after all that? Ironic twist. Okay, just kidding. Okay, and then did you wind up going to quote unquote prom?
I did. I went twice my junior year, where I was very, very sick. And the joke was, looking back on it, extremely racist, but the joke was Joel has SARS, because that was during the SARS era. So that was a fun experience for me, going to prom that way. And then my senior year, I also went to prom, and it was a very normal prom experience. I had a boyfriend at the time, but he went to a different school and our proms were on the same night. So we decided to say fuck each other and we went to our own proms alone.
No.
Yeah. So I didn't even get like my gay prom experience, which is really upsetting.
So you literally just went stag and hung out with your friends?
Yeah, basically.
What was the most trouble you ever got in high school?
I was suspended once for inappropriate contact with a girl who I was like, it was this, and again, this is awful, but like she was a friend of mine, and like these guys dared me to touch her boobs because I was gay, and they thought and we all thought it was funny and okay. And the teacher saw and was like, that's not okay if you're gay or what, who cares? And I was suspended for that. And it's one of those things I remember, like in my early 20s, as I was like starting to form a consciousness around like feminism, especially with regard, I think there was like this idea that like gay men were automatically sort of pro women in a way, which was really not the case. And so I remember reaching out to her via Facebook and being like, I am so sorry. And I hope that like, if you ever have sons, and like, I just don't want you to think that like gay men believe that they have a right to touch your body. And like, it's one of the most humiliating things I've ever done. And I'm deeply ashamed of it.
Did she respond?
Yeah. She was like, oh, I don't care.
Oh, that's nice. So at least you don't have to walk around with the horrible guilt. Oh man. Okay. And then in terms of like Amish style, give me like your favorite first experience you had in high school. Like, we finally allowed to drink Coca-Cola. Like, what was like something that we take for granted you got to do?
Having a locker was a really big deal to me in a way that I can't quite articulate. Like, having my own space to like stash like my cigarettes was like a big deal for me in a huge way. And I really fetishized having a locker, I think because of like pop culture. Like, I grew up watching like Saved by the Bell, and like I wanted that like typical TV high school experience, and the locker was a central part of that. And so I was really excited when I got one of those.
It's time for This or That. In this segment, I make my guest choose between two pop culture sensations from their high school years.
So this is the section where I'm going to talk to you about various things that were popular while you were in your high school, and you can tell me which one was more you. Now, by the way, most of them are pop culture, so most of them you only saw on VH1. I love the 2000s, but we'll see. In terms of films, were you more into Lord of the Rings or Star Wars?
I grew up on Star Wars. That was like one of the things I remember my parents were okay with. And so I guess Star Wars was definitely more my thing. I fell asleep in every single Lord of the Rings movie, but I did see them in the theaters.
Did your parents like Lord of the Rings? Because it was sort of vaguely religious.
Yeah, it was Christian-y. Yeah.
Okay, what about cartoon-wise? Did you like Finding Nemo, or were you an Ice Age?
You know what? I was a little too old for both of these, but Finding Nemo, I think, was, I remember going to see with friends. I think I was a little too old for Ice Age.
Did you know Ellen DeGeneres was a lesbian?
I think so. I, you know, weirdly grew up watching the Ellen show in syndication until she came out, and then we weren't allowed to watch anymore.
Okay, in terms of Fear Spelters, Beyonce or Pink?
Beyonce.
Why? I mean, I love them both, but why Beyonce more?
I was a big Destiny's Child fan. I really loved the Charlie's Angels soundtrack. That was like weirdly a CD that I owned and would listen to a lot. And I just remember that was the first time I was like introduced to Destiny's Child proper. And so I've been a big fan of hers ever since. And Pink, you know, I like Pink and I like the direction she's gone in now. But back then, I remember being really defensive of Britney Spears on her behalf in that one song where she sort of like shit talks Britney Spears. And I remember being sort of like, how dare she? Because Britney's first album was the very first CD I ever owned.
Okay, boy band wise, O-Town or 98 Degrees?
Sort of neither, but 98 Degrees, I remember I definitely jerked off to more than O-Town.
Oh, that's a compliment.
The Lachey's. The Lachey's were a big, they were, you know, the stars for a while for me.
Did you ever get to meet them and tell them that, Charming?
No, not yet.
Maybe they're listeners. Okay, so were you cool enough to have like one of those giant original iPods, or did you have what I had, which was like an off-brand, like MP3 player?
I had an iPod Switch. I remember that was the one thing I splurged on, but I was not a big gadget kid. Like I had a pay-as-you-go cell phone until I was in college.
Whoa. And what was do you remember your first AOL screen name?
Yeah. One of them was Chasing X, the X Sun, S-O-N. 7.
Why?
Jesus.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought it was some kind of cool. Okay, go on.
The next one was XX___316, John 316.
When is this switch to Hot Bottom? I'm like, when? I don't understand. Like, they're all like, they're so Christian. When did the switch?
Then it was Asian Carp for a while.
What's Asian Fish?
It was Asian. Well, they used to call me Asian Crap in high school, which again, it's the memory I don't necessarily want to unpack. And,
that was a nickname? Okay.
Yeah, it was a nickname. And so, yeah, I just swapped the letters and it was that for a while. And then it was Pick the Asian for, I believe, all the way through until AOL was dead.
Pick the Asian meaning like last one on the team, like Pick the Asian Kid?
I don't know. It was just, you know, Pick the Asian. Yeah, meaning me, I guess. I don't know.
Why wasn't it just like Joel K. Booster at AOL?
Because that's not how we did things back then. I mean, certainly now everything is that way, but back then it was like everyone was constantly changing their screen names. Everyone was constantly like, it was all, you know, underscore and uppercase and, you know, all of these things. And it was a lot. Oh my God. The number of times my away message would be, if you care to find me, look to the western skies. How embarrassing.
This is High School versus Now, where we find out how much my guest has changed since high school. What kind of food are you not into?
I'm pretty much into every kind of food. I guess like there's some Middle Eastern food, like Persian food, I'm not super into.
Okay. So you're in high school, early high school, you're invited to a homeschooler's meal. And basically it's just a giant plate of falafels. What would you do?
I would eat it because I was taught to always eat what was put in front of me at someone else's house. And that was always tough because I would end up like eating a cheese sandwich and a full glass of milk at Mike Taylor's house, my neighborhood friend growing up. And it was just the most disgusting thing I remember. But that was like a hardline rule is if you're in somebody else's house, you eat what they give you.
Okay. But nowadays you're an adult, you're invited to a big dinner party by, let's say, Tyra Banks. So it's a big deal, but it's like all veggie, but not even the good kind of veggie. It's like raw veggie diet. Now, what do you do?
I would probably, it depends on like, if it's a sit down dinner, I would still probably eat a little bit. But if it were one of those parties where it's like a buffet and everyone's mingling, I would just drink.
Okay. How about this? You're on your signature AOL gay chat room in high school secretly, and you realize that minister_sexy is actually from your religious church. You realize that he's in the gay chat room. Do you rat him out? What do you do?
There was definitely sleepovers where I got vibes from other kids in my youth group. And I've always wanted to like, this is a good reminder to like find them on Instagram and see if they're gay now. But it was very much like a don't ask, don't tell. Like I remember going to I worked at a Christian camp one year and I found out all of the guys who were employees would like circle jerk.
And didn't invite you?
And didn't invite me. But I remember even when I found out it was going on, I was like very much like staying in my room, not joining in, because I think like they were probably not super gay, but I was very, very gay. And so it would probably definitely be like a don't ask, don't tell sort of situation where I would just ignore it.
So you wouldn't out them to the elders or anything like that?
No.
Now, what about you go to like a brand new hot gay bar called Butts, but P-U-T-Z, and you see this like notorious anti-gay Republican like making out with somebody?
It depends on where I'm at in the night, but I would probably say something. I would probably say something to them directly. I've definitely said stuff to Aaron Schock when I see him out at certain parties.
Like what? What have you said? Are you available?
No. Usually I'm like pretty fucked up, but I'm usually like, what do you think you're doing here? Like, this isn't a space for you. Sort of that vibe.
Wow. So brave. Aren't you scared he's going to like beat you up?
No, because he's very into like I've like been at house parties on Fire Island and like asked him to leave. And he's very much into like getting into conversations. And he's like, let's talk about this. Like,
oh, brother.
And it's like, no, like you're just a vibe killer, dude. Like, this is not the vibe that I want for the party. And this is not, and like certainly debating it is not the vibe I want for a party. So goodbye.
So great. But you never thought about just literally taking a video of yourself and like putting it with him and be like, I'm telling everybody that you're gay.
Oh, no, because everybody, he's out now, I guess.
Well,
but
before.
Like, before, I would definitely probably take a picture, for sure.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to hear. Okay, now what about, let's say someone from your high school is listening. Is there anything you'd want to say to a particular person or to a teacher or a group of people or maybe to your entire high school? Is there anything you would like to maybe say all these years later?
I would like to say to Mike Siller, who was my first boyfriend, thank you and I'm sorry. I definitely did not handle my first relationship very well. And I like broke his heart in a very specific sort of way. And I mean, I'm sure he's completely over. I don't think it was scarring by any means, but I definitely could have been a nicer person about that situation.
Did you break up with him in an AOL chat room?
No, but I broke up with him like during tech for Bye Bye Birdie. So it was not, he was Albert. So like, you know, that was a stressful thing to do.
Wait, it was like, everybody, I need you on your marks. And you were like, P.S., it's over. And then it was just like, put on a happy face.
It was like after the Sitz Probe, I think. Yeah.
Sitz Probe, by the way, is the first sing through with the orchestra. And then he had to go on and be Albert?
Yeah. Actually, no, it was before the Sitz Probe because I remember he was actually like, it was the first time off book. And I remember I forgot a line and he, without saying a word, went out, got his script and threw it at me and said, here, because I wasn't off book yet.
He was also, I'm angry at you for breaking up with me. But hold on. Why did you have to break up with him during tech? Were you dating Hugo Peabody? Like, I don't understand. Why was this so important?
No, I just like, I don't know. I was a stupid kid. Like I don't know. I'm very impulsive in that regard. So I'm very much like, if I'm feeling a certain kind of way, I got to get it out.
For someone who literally was stuck in his house with a Bible the year before, you have the nerve to turn down another boyfriend? God, you even have one. Okay.
I know.
Okay. Well, hopefully he'll accept your apology. I wouldn't. Okay. And second, now, what would you say to a young 15-year-old or 16-year-old Joel who somehow was listening through a time-space continuum break?
I would just tell him, and this is cliche, but it's, I think, what I need to hear at that time, which is you're not going to hell and your life will be so much bigger than you can even imagine it now. This is not forever and you'll be so much happier that high school aren't your best years than the people who it is the best years for.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if you did wind up in hell? I mean, after all that... You're listening to this podcast in hell. Anyway, it all worked out. Thank you, Joel. Amazing childhood. Really so fascinating to hear about. And you're super funny. So thank you for being on my show. I applaud you.
Thanks for having me.
Seth Rudetsky's Back to School is produced by Sarah Esikoff. Our theme music was written by me, Seth Rudetsky, and sung by me and Maggie McDowell. Our band was me on piano, Mark Schmid on bass, Kerry Meads on drums, and Jim Hirschman on guitar. This episode was mixed by Sarah Esikoff.